Chapter 24 Chepstow Spring Fair. I've always had a peasant's love of a fair. When I was a kid in Talry, we'd go to the small midsummer fair on the River Commons. I loved the performers and the food, the music, the contests and the gaiety. When I went to an Arian academy, I was able to attend the Gambero Fair, which is one of the largest silk trading fairs along the coast. That's where I studied village girls and strong drink, and when I was an itinerant war mage, I went out of my way to travel towards fairs of great repute. You can often pick up a job after a couple of lords get into it, and they are a great place for picking up leads and gossip, and village girls. Attending a fair as a boy or as an artisan is very different from attending a fair as a noble, I learned. For one thing, going by horse is much, much quicker. For another, attending with an entourage of nearly 50 people slows you down quite a bit, and is as expensive as hell. When Sir Kay told me about how much it would cost for us to attend Sandaria's Chepstow Spring Fair, I started to have second thoughts. I wasn't paying close attention to the state of the treasury, but the sum he named seemed extravagant. But when I suggested that perhaps we should skip it, he looked scandalized. Mage Lord, recall that we are in conflict with one of our neighbours. He reminded me patiently. The fair is, by all accounts, an important social occasion. Then remember that you are a stranger to this land, and have yet to meet the high nobles of the region. All of them will be at the fair, or will send representatives. For Sevendor not to have a showing would be tantamount to declaring our weakness to the entire Riverlands. He seemed so sure of himself that I didn't feel right cancelling after that. Besides, I figured, it was just money. We ended up taking 9 wagons and a small army of retainers, guards, servants, and local merchants who wanted to get out of paying tolls along the way and didn't want the extra expense of guarding their wares. Alia and I, and our household, dominated 2 wains on our own, which was staggering. I'd walked into Beauval Vale 2 years ago with a pack horse and a knapsack. How did I acquire all of these things? 12 of the retainers were armed guardsmen, sporting newly sewn tabards with my new snowflake device on it. I had livery now. I didn't have that 2 years ago either. But the guards were necessary, and I was also taking Tyndall. Rondol had drawn the short straw and had to stay home this time, and Sir Festalin, the latter as much a native guide as an additional sword. He knew the politics of the local region better than anyone else in my employ. Sir Kay went with us as well, his first foray out of Sevendor in months. I knew Sir Kay was a capable fighter, and he was dressed like a real knight, and I brought along a 6 war wands in addition to my own blade. Why all the concern about our security? The problem was that we weren't going to be able to go through West Flaria without at least 2x as many men, and I was going to a fair, not a siege. Our frontier scouts had reported that Sire Gimbal had hired yet more mercenaries. Common folk, no better than bandits this time, not even poor country knights, to waylay anyone coming out of Sevendor. In addition, the 2 hamlets we crossed before crossing West Flaria's far frontier had been fortified and reinforced. That meant Cowland's Pass got considerably more traffic than usual, which was also why Sir Kay limited us to only 9 wagons. It was a chore getting them over the steep rise leading up to the pass. It also meant that Lord Trefalin got our tolls, and it added 6 to our journey, but it was worth it to not have to worry about archers sniping us every step of the way, or fighting our way past a couple of blockades. The journey across southern Sandaria toward Chepstow Castle was delightfully uneventful, giving me plenty of leisure time riding next to Alia, to play with the baby, and enjoy a pleasant buzz, a pipe, and a wineskin offered. The weather was glorious, the air smelling of vibrant, verdant expectation, and the scent of wildflowers. And being a noble had other privileges, I discovered. When you ride at the head of the convoy, you don't get covered in dust. We camped outside the ruins of Ferendor that night, and started running into other travellers on their way to the fair. A group of jugglers and musicians, and a lackluster bard on one side of the road, and 2 parties of merchants, 1 cloth, 1 spice, on the other, made it a merry camp, and after I magnanimously ordered a keg of ale opened, it was even merrier. The next morning we continued a little more slowly and a lot more painfully. We arrived on the outskirts of Chepstow Town's spacious commons in company with a large throng of like-minded travellers. An officious little man in a red and blue tabard found us on his list and directed us to our camp, collecting a purse, covering our rent for the week, and making each and every one of us swear the fair oath before a coin brother of Ilfney. That was a basic vow to the gods not to lie, steal, or start fights, and if you did get into a fight, no sharp blades were permitted except in prearranged duels, which had to take place outside of the fairgrounds. The penalty for violation was left solely to the discretion of the baron, but we were warned that included capital punishment, if he felt so inclined. Bannermore had been right. Baron Arathaniel didn't like anyone messing with his fair. Once we got to the little square, all 50 of us would have to live in, everyone pitched in to unload the tents and canopies, those who were not digging a privy or seeking firewood to purchase. All around us, other households were setting up in the darkness or in the flickering light of hastily lit fires. That wouldn't do at all. With a wave of my hand, a large spherical mage light shimmered into existence 50 feet overhead, bathing the commons in a glow twice as bright as moonlight. It was ampled to allow our retainers to set up more quickly, and after the initial shock ran through the crowd, our neighbours were grateful for the extra illumination. When that wasn't enough, Tyndall and Bannermore and even Sir Festeran managed to create a small light over various projects. It allowed camp to go up a lot more quickly and efficiently. It also caused a crowd to gather around the encampment, to the point where I had to post guards to keep onlookers from interfering with my people. I couldn't blame them. No mage had been that showy in the Riverlands in living memory. Hell, the mage light alone would have taken me half a day to hang before Irionite. I was pleased to see that Sir Kay had not consigned us to sleep in the mean tent we'd slept in on the road the night before. The pavilion that his people erected for our use was lavish. "Picked it up on our last market run into Sendaria Port," he explained. "It was Sir Ulvedic's. Are you familiar with the knight?" "I'm afraid not," I admitted. "No reason you should be, unless you follow professional jousting," he said with a dismissive shake of the head. "Sir Ulvedic was a local favourite, but, alas, he broke his collarbone at the start of last tournament season and had to part with this lovely canopy for a fraction of what he paid for it." "How much?" I asked, with a sense of foreboding. "The mage lord shouldn't concern himself with such petty matters," Sir Kay said smoothly, "which I was learning was code for none of your business, my lord. But it was a steal, and I think you'll enjoy the appointments, most of which we won't be setting up until morn." It was pretty impressive by night. It was a mustard yellow colour canvas with black trim, and Kay had hired a couple of seamstresses to tack the Seven-Door Snowflake banner to it, so it looked official. The tent itself had 2 main support poles and 10 wall poles, giving us a lavish amount of space inside. Alia and I were bedded down in one half, while our staff used the other to take care of the baby and our stuff. There were even 2 interior walls of canvas to give us privacy. I liked the look of that. I told him I trusted his judgment about the encampment, and I went to see the fair with Alia. Since most people were still setting up, there wasn't a lot available in the way of amusements, but we heard music and laughter, and we followed it. I had Sir Festeran accompany us, Sir Kay insisted. A landed noble did not go forth into the darkness of night without a loyal retainer, and we were able to push through the crowd that had gathered around our mage lights and slip away. We had great fun that night. For a few precious hours I wasn't a mage lord. I wasn't a war mage or even a spellmonger. I was just a boy, taking a girl to the fair. A boy with a purse full of coin. That made a big difference. I was never poor growing up, but my father was thrifty with his coin. When I went to the fair as a child, if I had a copper to spend, I was ecstatic. When I was a war mage, I'd usually be cautious with my spending myself, resisting the temptation to spend what I'd saved on the exotic goods and fanciful amusements available. Well, mostly resisted. But that night I was able to take my wife from vendor to vendor and spend what I wished, without worrying about the cost. We began with supper, in a little encampment selling food, halfway between our camp and the fairgrounds, and enjoyed a large slab of Remeran cheese, a bottle of cheap wine, a large loaf and three bowls of thick groundling stew, heavily seasoned with rosemary and pepper. I don't know how much it cost. Again, at Sir Kay's insistence, Sir Festeran toted around my purse and paid the vendors. Nobles don't sally their hands with such common trade, apparently. We stopped at an encampment a little closer to the grounds for another bottle, this time of a wild Wenshari wine, while we listened to a band of drunken river folk musicians play dueling pipes for us. I encouraged Alia to get up and dance with me, which she did reluctantly at first, but soon with drunken enthusiasm. By the time we left, our hearts were pounding and we were both smiling and holding hands like maidens. Sir Festeran tried to hide his amusement, but he was a good kid and couldn't help but grin as we frequently stopped for kissing and embracing. We ended up at another makeshift tap room just off the main fairgrounds. Run by a local taverner, he had spent coin on a professional harper from the Pearwoods. She was absolutely stunning, both in appearance and in performance, and we were all enchanted. I had Fess tip her and the proprietor heavily, and invited her to stop and play for us back at camp before she left for more coin. Of course, we drank with every stop, so by the time the moon was setting and Alia's eyes were drooping, I had to impose on Festeran to lead us back home. I had no idea where we were or how to get to where we were. I probably could have done a spell, but at that point I was drunk enough to make even a mage map dubious. I probably couldn't even have used my witchstone. Alia was thrilled at both the attention and the entertainment. She had accepted the constraints of her new life with a great deal of grace, but the demands were heavy on her. She had to learn how to be a wife, a mother, and a lady of the domain, all at once, and this respite was welcome. She looked like she did when we first met. Was it really less than 2 years before? The next day we woke up naked, entangled in our blankets in our rope bed, and thoroughly hungover. I didn't see how that couldn't be counted as a successful evening. Sir Kay had been true to his word, and when he finally had us awakened, the camp had been transformed. There were now 6 tents, in addition to the grand pavilion that was my castle away from home. One was devoted to food and cooking, one to storage and wares, and the other 4 housed our entourage. A small frame of lashed-together poles now served as a gate to our encampment, and additional banners and streamers now fluttered in the morning breeze over the heads of our guards. There were always 2 of those at the gate, and another patrolling the camp. With the baby inside, and potential foes around us, I didn't think that was too much. I couldn't even think about the possibility of losing him somehow, but if a couple of big Bovali lads with long swords and spears made me feel better about it, I didn't mind having them along. While fighting with blades was prohibited in the fair, we could guard our sight with them. In their new 7-dory livery they looked almost respectable. Sir Kay had directed a trestle to be set up behind the pavilion, away from the gate, where we could eat in relative privacy. Alia and I shared a quiet breakfast alone, surrounded by people, before she got an escort to the privy and I had a pipe. It was peaceful, not having a job I needed to do while everyone else bustled around me. I tried not to feel guilty about that. Plenty of people were interested in stopping by our camp, simply because Sevendor had been under ducal control for so long that this was the first time a noble delegation had been to the fair in living memory. I was struck by just how poorly the folk of the Bontal Riverlands viewed Sevendor, and I honestly couldn't blame them. But I also revolved to change that. A lot. We got our first noble visitor that morning when Sire Sigalan came by with a small following, including his winsome sister, Lady Sarsha. I recognized the knight at once before he arrived at our gate, even under his mantle. He was a striking fellow, and his height and leanness made him stand out. I made a point of meeting him at the entrance of our encampment myself, and I was gratified that Sir Festeran at least understood enough to join me. Tyndall was still flirting with the camp cooks from the next camp over, but Fess knew how valuable the friendship of even a poor knight like Sire Sigalan could be in feudal politics. I greeted the man warmly, and was gratified that he returned the sentiment, so of course I called for wine. Sire Sigalan and his sister, Lady Sarsha, and a small number of his yeomen and their wives with him, but that was nearly all the retainers he'd brought out of the mountains. were both early, he explained. Most of these lordly encampments, you see, were set up by their servants, far in advance of their arrival. Lord Trefalan will not arrive before tomorrow, and the Warbird of West Flaria, he said wryly, won't be here until the day after. As suits a personage of his importance, he added with a chuckle. How large a party should we expect him to have, sir? Sir Festeran asked politely. Ordinarily he'd know. His father would be included in the retinue. But he'd not been home in months now, and news was a little hard to come by across our armed frontier. At least 100, said Sigalan with a heavy sigh. He's been hiring a lot of mercenary knights of late. He even had the temerity to try to enlist me and my folk again, while insulting us in the invitation. We, Trestandori, are poor, but we're proud. But don't worry, there is a ban on naked steel in anger, or even formal dueling, until the fair is ended. Baron Arathaniel would love nothing more than for the Warbird to start a fight. If you want a shot at Gimbal, you'll have to take up a lance. He fancies himself quite a jouster, and plans on making a good showing at the tournament. I'm no jouster, I said, chuckling at the image of me dressed as a heavy cavalryman and embarrassing myself. But I might feel compelled to wager against him. Lord Gimbal is a puissant knight, Sir Festeran pointed out. When he was younger, living at his brother's court, it was thought that he might take up the trade of the professional jouster. He really is good at it, he admitted grudgingly. Bah! There are a dozen better, snorted Sire Sigalan, and unseating a man on a dry, well-raked field is a far cry from real battle. He'll be able to intimidate some of the less powerful local knights, but the real professionals won't see him as much of a challenge. Sir Ewan is here, as is Farn Kinslayer, he said knowingly. I had no idea who they were, but by Sir Festeran's expression they were jousters of some repute. Baron Arathaniel has put up an apiary estate as prize. In addition to the usual gold and trinkets, he has a small holding in the south of the barony whose lord recently died. His widow and property shall go to the victor, or he can sell it back to the baron for a goodly price. An apiary? I asked, curious. We didn't have one yet in Sevendor. Mostly we depended upon wild bees from the westward, but Master Olmeg had been urging me to procure a few hives. I like the sound of that. How many lances will Sevendor be entering in the lists? Asked the Mountain Lord, curious. We have but one, brave old Sir Desalan, who we sponsor only out of duty and love. He's a good man, but likely won't see too many more winters. He wishes to test himself in life on the field of honor one last time before he does so in the underworld. I would enter myself, but these days I find myself more drawn to archery, he said. I could only take that to mean that he had taken possession of the 50 bows and 1,000 arrows he had been quietly purchasing against a future conflict with West Flaria. How many lances are we entering into the lists? I asked. I only had a vague idea what that meant, but I didn't want to sound like it. Sir Kay, a moment, please, I called. My castellan was there almost instantly, and shook Sire Sigalan's hand firmly. 3, Mage Lord, he assured me. Sir Ferrando wishes to try his luck on the lists, as does Sir Ronsil, with hope toward an increase in his fortune. Indeed, he has entered the lists in a number of contests. I had given Sir Ronsil first choice of the arms, armor, and destrier he'd helped me capture from the West Flarians, and 3 of the ransoms, when they came in. In the meantime, he was near penniless. While I didn't mind paying his upkeep for his service, he was not a man who likes to hang on to the stirrups of others, and was expressing a lot of ambition about his fortunes in the Riverlands. I didn't doubt he was hoping for victory most earnestly. "Who's the 3?" I asked. "Why, I am, Mage Lord," Sir Kay said, an eyebrow raised. "I was just heading to the Herald to register for the lists. I was not unskilled in my younger days." "You are going to joust? You're going to compete?" I asked incredulously, my latent hangover ambushing my senses. Too late, I realized what I'd done. Sir Kay's face didn't change, but his eyes did. It occurs to me to remind the Mage Lord that I was training for a gentleman's career at arms when he was still an infant, he said, clearly rejecting a more colourful description. I assure you, I am equally able with lance or quill.
I meant no disrespect, I said hurriedly. I've seen you fight. I just hadn't thought you'd want to compete.
A knight likes to keep his lance sharp, he shrugged, as if he didn't expect me to understand. He was wearing one of the nicer sets of armour we'd gotten as ransom, a sturdy steel breastplate over a thickly gambesoned coat of plates. His great Wilderland-style war shield was leaning against the trestle, not with Sevendor's device emblazoned upon it, but his own personal charge in red and gold. Then carry the luck of Sevendor and the strength of Duin with you, I said sincerely, mindful not to irritate my most valuable retainer, and make certain I get back all the castellan I started with, I added. I couldn't very well tell the man no. Well, I could, but it wouldn't have been either fair or nice. But I suddenly had the horrific thought of Sir Kay dying in some stupid tournament, forcing me to actually run my domain. Be careful, I emphasized.
Are you not entering the lists, Sir Festeran?
Asked Lady Sasha, Sigalan's comely sister. She was as tall as her brother, and dressed prettily for the fair.
If I recall, you nearly won the Squire's tournament last year.
The young knight blushed.
I didn't think it was quite right, entering with me being a hostage. Not without permission, at least.
Then he looked sheepish.
Since I've only been in two tournaments, he explained, one when I was knighted and then the Squire's tournament for Sir Gimbal's birthday, I don't think I'm really ready. There are some very skillful knights enrolled, he said diplomatically. I couldn't hope to win, even if I did enter. I would not mind breaking a few lances in such company, he added.
Nonsense, Sir Kay said, slapping the boy on his shoulder. A knight should never back down from a challenge and the opportunity to win honour. The greater the foe, the greater the glory, he pointed out.
If you win, countered Sir Fess, otherwise you're just another body on the field.
Fess, if you want to enter, I'll be happy to sponsor you, I said. If you wear my badge, then you won't be in violation of your parole. I wasn't a knight. That is, I hadn't been raised as a knight, in a knight's household, with the social and legal expectations and obligations of a knight. I also didn't know much beyond the art of being a heavy cavalryman, beyond which end of the lance was the pointy one. There were plenty of war magi who did, but they weren't the sons of bakers. But this was clearly important to the boy and, well, it was only money.
I would be grateful, Mage Lord, he said humbly, if you don't think I'll disgrace Sevendor.
Sevendor has been so disgraced for so long. You'd have to go a long way to do that, I pointed out.
Sir Kay, add Sir Festeran to the lists under Sevendor's banner, please.
As you wish, Mage Lord, he said. He'd tried hard to conceal his emotions, but I could tell he was pleased. Knights.
Good luck to you both, then, I said. Would you like any enchantments to help?
They all looked scandalized and exchanged looks before Kay politely declined. That would be unchivalrous, he said diplomatically. Perhaps you can assist Sir Tyndall.
Tyndall? What's he got to do with it?
Gods, he didn't enter the lists, did he? He's no jouster.
No, Sir Kay agreed, with a note of satisfaction. But he fancies himself a swordsman. He has entered himself in the single swordplay competition and the archery competition. Less glory, if no less honour.
Ish his tits, I swore.
Feeling bold, is he?
So it seems. Yet he has some skill with the blade, he conceded, and he is as good a shot with a bow as any Beau Varley lad.
I think he just wants to attract the attention of girls.
No one argued with me. That day we spent shopping. We had an extensive list, in part because the winter had depleted us, and in part because Sevendor Castle had been neglected for so long that it just needed some attention. We spent far too much for my comfort, enough that we had to hire yet another wagon to haul it back home. But the buying opportunities afforded by a big fair are just too good to pass up. There are some things a castle needs that can only be acquired or commissioned at a fair, or ordered from the merchants there. We spent well over 300 ounces of gold that day. I tried hard not to think about it.
The deliveries of our wares arrived in our camp in a constant stream, and Sir Kay always had someone on duty to inspect them, pay for them, and attest to the receipt before they were stored in the wares tent or packed into our wagons. All I had to do was point and say, "I want that," and it appeared. Like magic, only easier. That night we began our skulking early, visiting a few select encampments before we started serious drinking. Sir Festeran explained the local custom. A lord's retinue would visit the campsite's immediate neighbours first as a matter of courtesy, and then begin working in the neighbouring lords before visiting travelling nobles and affluent merchants or guilds. So we started by visiting the camps to either side of us. To the west lay the rough camp of a mountain lord, Sire Cambron of Greenmount. Cambron was just 2 steps away from the peasantry himself, a timid little country knight who was here mostly to marry off his sister. I saw his sister. If the drink held out and the dowry was generous, she had a chance. To the east was the more civilized lair of Sire Azadopin. He was a vassal of Sevendor's western neighbour, a dark-complected man of middle age. He fancied himself a jouster, so he was there with his full armour, but he weighed 2 ingots more than he should, thanks to the noble lifestyle. I was no jouster, but I don't think I would have feared him on the lists. Our visits were cordial and friendly, with Sir Kay attending and making introductions firmly in his element. Sire Cambron did his best to get Sir Festeran to court his sister, but the boy begged off, claiming he could make no promises or seek to court while held as a hostage. I've never seen someone so relieved to be a prisoner in my life. Sire Azadopin was gruffer and less friendly. He had heard much about Sevendor, apparently, through the filter of his liege and common gossip. I was amused to learn that I was considered an evil sorcerer by some, who had conquered Sevendor by magic and treachery. Others considered me a kind of saviour, while most saw me merely as a curiosity. But some people were not happy with the ascension of a mage lord at all. Sire Azadopin let that slip a few times. There were those, it seemed, who saw me as an abomination and a violation of sacred law. A few nobles had already forbid any commerce with Sevendor. We had trouble with a few vendors after it was revealed who we were. That disturbed me, of course. While I hadn't seen a royal censor since my wedding day, I knew that the institution was still eager to see my head in Merwin, or wherever the censorate loyalists, who had not followed General Hartarian's lead, ended up setting up their headquarters. At the time, I dismissed it. I was having a good time. I didn't want to think about the people who wanted to kill me. Not with that much good food, good drink, and good company around. That night was another long, lush, delightfully decadent descent into drunkenness and debauchery, with Alia casting off her ill-fitting cloak of nobility and carousing like a lusty peasant. I love my wife, which apparently everyone in camp was assured of, as the pavilion walls did little to conceal the noise of our lovemaking, and honestly, I was too piss-drunk to whip up a silence spell. The next day the fair was in full swing, and we did more shopping, this time for more specialty items. Alia ended up taking a group of the castle women to interrogate the cloth merchants and enrich the cosmetics merchants, while I hunted up magical supplies with Bannermore. The former foot wizard was a good companion at the fair, a shrewd bargainer who knew many of the specialty craftsmen and merchants we needed to purchase, order, or commission from. Twice he kept me from spending money wastefully, and he bargained for a gallon of acid like a fishwife at the end of market day. I actually got to see Fester and Joust that afternoon, only because the glass merchant I was visiting was near to the list field, and I heard the herald call his name to be ready. It was exciting. We watched from the cheap seats at the far end of the field. He won his bout against another young knight from Sendaria, 2 lances to 1. He had good form, from what I could tell with my inexperienced eye. At least he didn't fall off his horse. Sir Kay had apparently won his first round soundly, 3 lances to none, and was scheduled to fight a circuit professional a few hours later. Sir Ferrando had lost his first round narrowly, but was still hopeful of his second fight. Sir Gimble had bested both of his opponents. I also saw Tyndall fight later that afternoon on the other side of the field. The swordplay competition was strongly attended,
and there were at least thrice as many competitors as there were for jousting. It's cheaper to own a sword and armour than a sword, lance, armour, shield, horse, groom, stable, etc. A lot of country knights and yeomen were entered into the competition. The prizes were a lot less grand than in the jousting competition, but they were more useful, too. In this case, the top prizes were a matched pair of hunting hawks, a beautifully tooled saddle, and a sheep. Tyndall was doing extremely well. He wore his captured armour and wielded my old mageblade, Slasher, which confounded his opponents, who were not used to dueling against a shorter blade. I cringed at the thought that he had blunted it, but it was his now. Tyndall had also stripped his armour down to the bare essentials, wisely eschewing the mantles and ribbons and other fripperies every other swordsman seemed to wear. His helmet, likewise, had been chosen because it fit tightly on his head without obscuring his vision. He also knew how to work a crowd, I noted, with a bit of satisfaction. Tyndall was becoming quite an extrovert, and when his name was called to prepare, he made a great show of putting on his helm with flamboyance. It didn't hurt that he was both youthful and handsome. A chorus of squealing peasant girls bore testament to his skill with the public. His opponent was a knight 10 years his senior, bearing arms, featuring 3 fish leaping out of a river on his surcoat. His sword was a typical battle sword, about 4 feet of steel, nearly 4 inches wide at the base. It was, technically, blunted, but it outweighed Slasher significantly. He whirled the blade around effectively enough in practice, and his strokes in the air were precise enough to make me the smallest bit concerned for my senior apprentice. I shouldn't have worried. Tyndall saluted the man casually when the herald introduced them and explained the rules by rote. 1 point for a clean hit to a limb, 2 points for a body hit, 3 for a successful strike to the head. First man to 5 points wins. Tyndall stood there looking amused and relaxed, like an eager peasant boy about to play a game of ball. But the moment the chime rang, his casual demeanour changed. Tyndall was an animal. I've seen a lot of sword play over the years, and there are plenty of distinctive styles. Tyndall had none of them. What he did have was a keen eye, swift reflexes, and deft footwork. He apparently saw, as I did, that his opponent's vision was occluded by his great helm, and that his surcoat not only weighed him down, but also restricted the range of movement he could employ with that heavy blade. So Tyndall decided to just avoid the matter entirely by rolling to the ground, over his shoulder, and striking the back of his foe's knee while the man was clumsily hacking at the empty air. 1 point. Tyndall sprung to his feet a lot more spryly than his more heavily armoured opponent could have hoped to, and as the man spun to try to face him, Tyndall quickly circled around the same direction, staying elusively out of his range of vision. A wild swing at where he thought Tyndall would be threw him open, and Tyndall managed a good thump between his shoulder blades. 2 points. Just as the judge called out the scoring, Tyndall ducked down under the man's field of vision, changed direction, and ended up coming up behind him again. With a lot more flourish than was absolutely needed, he brought Slasher's blunted blade down on the unprotected great helm in front of him, producing a satisfying clang. Headshot. 3 points. Tyndall was declared the winner, 6 points to none. The loser was angry at the mage knight's refusal to fight properly, that is, to stand on 2 legs and consent to be stabbed, but it was well within the rules. Hell, Tyndall hadn't even used magic, as far as Bannermore and I could tell. He made a great show of celebrating his victory by pumping his sword in the air. I waved at him and threw him a high sign before retreating and allowing him to enjoy his victory with the assistance of multiple kisses from admiring ladies. I would have enjoyed staying to watch him fight again, but I had places to go and stuff to buy. "You're going to need to watch that one," Bannermore said quietly as we left the lists and headed back toward the craftsman. I still wanted to visit the booksellers and see what I could do to improve the castle's library. "What do you mean?" Tyndall is as loyal as I could ask.
"It's not disloyalty, I fear, Mage Lord. It's the boy's brashness."
The former foot wizard shook his head.
"He's as talented as they come, but he has a strong head and a weak heart about some things."
I had to chuckle. "That's one reason why I like him. He's enthusiastic. But your point is well noted.
I've been conspiring to see he gets a more proper education, and I do think that Sir Kay's influence has tempered the boy quite a bit this year. Bannermore looked aghast.
You mean he was worse than he is now?
Not worse, just less sophisticated. He always tries to do the right thing. He just has a hard time knowing what that is. That ignorance can be corrected, I think. In Rondell's case, the boy is nearly as talented, twice as smart, but twice as timid. There is little reason he cannot become a knight mage, in fact, as well as in name. He's no Gareth, I said, referring to the smart, talented, but physically weak mage someone had sent me to train in war magic, apparently as a joke.
Don't sell Gareth short,
Bannermore said, shaking his head. I've been working with the boy, me and Olmegan Zagor. He's got talent, and living so near the Snowstone is bringing it out. I'd say the boy would make a first-class enchanter, and he has a head for numbers. I'm having him assist me in preparing for the magic fair. I hope you don't mind, when he's not helping Olmeg mulch something, or tend goats with Zagor. I'll use him even more, with your permission, when my shop is complete. I'd granted Bannermore an acre on the northern outskirts of the remodelled Sevendor village for his home, shop, and office, and while construction of the grand building was underway, it was not nearly complete enough for the spell warden's taste. There were just too many construction projects going on in Sevendor to get the labour he needed. I have no objections to that. He's a good lad. I hated to not give him a stone, but until I can find some compelling reason to, he'll have to bide his time and see this as a learning opportunity. But we need to do something about all of the stray magi who are starting to accumulate. I don't want any problems down the road. I paused meaningfully. That's why I hired a spell warden. Then I'll use Gareth as I see fit, as long as you're willing to pay his upkeep. He might prove to be a good deputy, even. About an hour after Tyndall's fight, Bannermore and I were starting to think about lunch after procuring 5 or 6 different blends of smoke. We were just lighting up and considering the merits of apple fritters and sour jack versus the benefits of half a cold roast chicken and a slab of bread when I heard, literally, the very last thing I wanted to hear. Minilan of Sevendor, son of Rindon the Baker, called the Spellmonger, lay down your arms and surrender in the name of the King.